This is the sound of turning ideas into software. This is the sound of engineering and passion. Work. Work more. Work harder. Experiment. Build. Break. And build again. Write code. Improve it. Job done. Celebrate. Insurance, finance, retail, defense, robotics, energy. Amethix.
Welcome back to another episode of Data Science at Home podcast. I'm Francesco, podcasting from the office of Amethix Technologies based in Brussels City, Belgium. We are currently at the ByteNook in central Brussels, and this is Data Science at Home, the second episode of an amazing series, in my opinion, with my old good friend Lacho. Hi, Lacho, how are you doing today?
I'm great, and how are you?
I'm very good, thank you so much. So today we are going to discuss continue that conversation that we started a week ago, which is about aerospace series, essentially, so about aerospace applications, with the emphasis on, of course, the Rust ecosystem. But before getting to the tooling and, you know, programming languages and Rust in particular, we are both fans of Rust, of course, you know. We would like to cover some of the, let's say, most common topics or major topics that one has to definitely get familiar with if they want to start playing with aerospace technology and aerospace applications. So in this episode, we promised to cover the part about continuous integration and continuous deployment, which are very well-known strategies, especially known for software engineers, for mobile apps, for example, but, you know, just pretty much any type of app these days. So, Lacho, how do these things differ in aerospace applications? And, of course, let's start first with what is continuous integration and continuous deployment for those probably few who yet do not know what these things are.
We can start with continuous integration. The basics of it is just an environment where you can run your code, run the tests, and see results before actually this code gets merged or before it's accepted in the bigger application. And it's a good place to point out that in these short 20 minutes, we can get that deep into each topic. But I promise that we're going to give some bits and pieces here and there. The main development that's currently happening in the Aero Rust community is specifically targeting embedded systems. And these topics are actually part of the development process that we're going through right now. Of course, all companies, especially the private ones, don't share this information to the public. So aerospace companies might be doing it differently. And unless you're working for them, you can't actually know how they're doing it. Of course, there are some good practices and bad practices shared online and, you know, in general. So just a small note that I wanted to add here.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, that's kind of the case pretty much anywhere. I mean, the big players very rarely disclose indeed the strategies and, you know, sometimes even kind of a secret sauce of what they found in the years. And they, you know, tend to protect a bit that type of knowledge for obvious reasons, sometimes industrial secrets, some other times, you know, just to maintain some kind of technology advantage with respect to potential competitors. And so, of course, this is even more prominent for aerospace applications where, you know, the players are not that many, as at least not as many as we find, for example, for social media and many other mobile applications. The competitors and, of course, the competition is very tough there. When we speak about aerospace technology and companies, you know, I'm not saying that we can count them on one hand, but very close to that, probably, at least the big players.
Indeed. And we want to, in this series, we want to introduce, if you're not aware, dear listener, of these topics, but also give you a bit of insight of some of the things that are happening in the aerospace industry. Of course, this is know-how that each company, each organization wants to keep to themselves. but we want to give you a glimpse into it as well. And continuing to our topic, so continuous integration. If you're an app developer or web developer, it doesn't really matter. You've probably already know what continuous integration and continuous deployment is. But briefly, as I mentioned already, usually what you use for continuous integration is a specific tool, for example, GitHub Workflows, or there's CircleCI, Travis. There are so many tools nowadays that you can use to run these workflows, if I can say it like that, which do some checks or run some linters or test your code or do even deployments on specific server and so on and so forth. So we're going to focus on them today. And what, in my experience, is the first step when we talk about continuous integration is, of course, running the tests. If the tests are not passing in your pull request that you want somebody from your organization to take a look at and indeed merge, then they're no probably not going to even review it.
That is very true. Lacho, I have a question before you continue. When you speak about tests, are you usually referring to the typical unit tests or what some other kind of test?
I believe you can do all kinds of tests. You can do tests, unit tests, you can do functional tests, you can do integration tests, because most of the tools nowadays also provide you with, let's say, starting a database, which will be specifically for, you know, running your continuous integration. So if you have a database in your application, you can actually run tests with an actual database on each pull request, for example.
Okay. So what is the, can you mention some of the, let's say, most prominent benefits of having versus not having a CI/CD in place? Oh, CI/CD is, of course, continuous integration, continuous deployment.
Yes, for continuous integration, definitely it's a way to not only standardize your organization workflow when you're developing a software, but also a way for you to know that it's not only working on your machine, but it also works in the continuous integration. And we can mention some of the drawbacks or some of the caveats that I've personally seen in continuous integration when running tests and so on. But in general, it's a good practice because, for example, in Rust, you can also run linters, which will make sure that all the code in the repository is formatted in a specific way that is standardized for everybody working on the project.
Yeah, we were laughing before because it works on my machine. It's kind of a meme now.
Yes.
Now it's a very old one for nerds and software developers, which is indeed, and I explain here for those who are not familiar with the concept, that many times people who, you know, commit and try to merge stuff, they say, oh, but it works. It works on my machine and probably doesn't on any other machine in the world because, you know, maybe the conditions where that particular software is running is unique to the machine of the author of that commit, right? So think about libraries, dependencies, and God knows what. So the CI/CD, in fact, the continuous integration in particular, allows you to, let's say, replicate the development environment that the developer has in his or her local machine so that the software works not just on my machine, but on everyone's machine. And in fact, on this third-party machine, which is the CI/CD infrastructure that is executing and performing the tasks for pretty much any developer in the organization.
Yes, indeed. And also it's good to mention that you can also run your own server with your own continuous integration environment. And you know, if you don't want to be reliant on a specific platform, this is also possible a long time ago, basically. But nowadays, it's even more integrated. And we're going to share a very nice and cool tool that can help you with this exact problem.
That's very interesting. Lacho, I have another question that is more personal curiosity, which is, you know, kind of the distinction between, you know, regular applications and, of course, aerospace applications. When you want to test something in a regular application, by regular, I mean traditional application, like think about a database, an API, a bunch of logic compute units here and there that execute functions, and you know, you can test your software in a way that, you know, you run the tests, you see if they succeed, and you go on. In aerospace applications, there might be other things involved that are kind of difficult to replicate. For example, the presence of a satellite, or I don't know, the proximity to whatever object in space, or reading sensor data from a sensor. So, you know, how do you deal with this, you know, the presence of these external objects, let's say, or dynamics that usually you don't find in traditional software development?
Yeah, good question. And I think if we take how you write tests for a simple application or just regular application, you usually have your unit tests, which are very small pieces of code that test a very small piece of code in your application. And I think this is analogous to aerospace development and what you explained, because the problem is exactly the same. You have a small sensor that you somehow need to mock the data from. And you can do that in unit tests as well, right? You mock some external input from the user or whatever, and that's how you test the rest of the application. Of course, you can do very, very more difficult stuff, right? You can do whole simulations of the sensor. You can put the whole hardware in a simulated environment and project an actual object in the simulation so that the actual hardware thinks there is an actual object there, but it's running in a simulation. And of course, last but not least, the next step is to take the actual hardware and build a full setup, like physical setup that you can test these things. And
this is pretty much what I've seen probably on the NASA website, or I don't remember where, when they replicated the landing of Mars rover, one of the Mars rovers, right, in indoor, and they kind of replicated the environment as close as possible to what they would expect Mars would look like when, you know, the rover lands. And of course, these are like physical simulations, right? These are like real.
Indeed. And I'm not sure how our listeners are into like the whole Mars missions, but for example, the Ingenuity helicopter, how they actually tested these giant propellers on Earth, they strapped it to a special contraption, the whole like helicopter, to simulate the gravity of Mars, basically.
Wow.
And I believe they've put it in a like a giant vacuum chamber so that they can lower the pressure as well, because the pressure is why you actually need these large propellers, right? Mm. The less air you have, the bigger the propeller you need. So it's a good way to test if something will be working, especially if you can't go and fix it later on. You know, you can't just jump to Mars, fix it real quick, go back, of course. And you need these physical testing environments, as well as, for example, rocket engines are also how they test for the vacuum. Of course, you have like nozzles that are specifically made for vacuum and can't, like literally can't work in like sea level. They won't work, they will explode, right? Or they won't sustain the explosions inside the the thrust. So there is a really neat and nice way that they are actually testing this. Maybe we can share some resources later.
Oh, for sure. And of course, some of these resources will be available as the show notes of this episode on the official website, datascienceathome.com. As always, feel free to check, of course, the first episode of this series about aerospace applications and, of course, some emphasis on the Rust programming language. So, okay, I think we have enough of continuous integration. Well, as you mentioned at the beginning of this episode, it cannot be enough. We cannot cover all this massive amount of knowledge in just 20 minutes, but we want to give hints for listeners to go and search for the references they believe are going to be, the next pointers towards learning more about continuous integration and continuous deployment. Speaking of which, continuous deployment, what it is exactly, and why is it important for aerospace applications?
I'm not sure how well it ties to aerospace, because once an actual airplane is flying, then you probably don't want to continuously deploy on the in flight, you know. But what usually this point, in applications, web applications and mobile applications, it makes sense to rapidly deploy your application to the user. But for aerospace applications, it makes more sense while you're developing something and you want to upload it, let's say, or flash it, or to fully test the whole contraption hardware, you want to deploy it constantly and test all the changes that you made. And this is the whole, in a nutshell, explanation. An automated way to reliably and quickly deploy your application to wherever you need to deploy it. Whether this is a web server or hardware, this is basically the continuous deployment.
Right. And so what are the things that usually you measure during deployment, like failure, or what type of metrics? I know that this question might be too broad, of course, but you can provide some examples up to your knowledge or experience.
Well, in continuous deployment, if your application has any metrics, it basically means that it failed. Because what continuous deployment actually means is that you're deploying on, not always, but usually on a production server. So at that point, your tests must be passing. You should have run all the checks that you can before actually deploying your application. Because at that point, your application is ready to be deployed, right? Of course, that's not applicable for, let's say, a staging environment or a testing environment where you want, it's not mandatory for things to work. They may break. But if you're deploying to a production server, then if you have metrics that you're following, probably your application is broken on the production server. So not very good day, I would say.
Not a good thing. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And there is yet another one, which is software and hardware in loop.
Yes, we briefly touched upon that idea. And I already mentioned software in the loop means that you take your software application, whether this is like a full system, multiple applications, and so on, and you run it in a simulated environment. So everything without an actual hardware, right? So you can put your software in a 3D environment with a 3D model of your hardware, run some objects at it, see how it reacts, for example, if it avoids it or not, and test it in a simulated way. And hardware in the loop is basically the same thing, but in this case, you use an actual hardware that you put your software in, and then the whole thing you put in an actual simulation. So the hardware running the software is responding to the simulated environment.
Right. So if I understand it correctly, imagine you have a controller that is the real thing. Now, this controller is receiving, let's say, some inputs that don't come from the real world, but they come from a simulated environment, like indeed a simulator. Think about attitude, position, orientation, IMU, sensor data, whatever. And this controller, the hardware controller, is actually controlled by, let's say, software. So, but the controller is real. The controller is hardware, right? That would be the case. So it's kind of a mix between the two, software and hardware.
Yes.
And that's I find that extremely interesting and fascinating. It's almost like augmented reality, right?
Yes, but for software. And it usually a lot of people use very specialized tools or build their own. So it's not as augmented reality.
Right. So now that you mentioned tooling, what's out there? I believe that you are, you know, advising for open source libraries or tools in particular, knowing your organization and also the project that you have started. Of course, I cannot think anything else than open source for your particular case. But what do you advise? What do you think is worth knowing and inspecting, especially for the listener who's getting, you know, closer and closer to the this fascinating topic?
Yes, as an open source person and like running a whole open source community, of course, we do focus more on open source tooling in general. And especially if you're using GitHub, and nowadays most people actually use GitHub, you have the GitHub workflows that are integrated in GitHub. Of course, for large organizations, this might be a problem, especially when you start paying the bills. when you have a big or a multiple projects in general, and you have multiple workflows running, of course, there comes a time when GitHub will actually want you to pay for this time and these virtual machines. But for small projects, personal projects, or not so big companies and organizations in general, there are good open source solutions, and GitHub workflows is a good start. There are a few alternatives. Of course, GitLab has their own thing. I don't remember how it's called. I haven't used GitLab for a long time. You have then CircleCI, which is specifically, again, targeting like running workflows and continuous integration. Travis is also very popular, but nowadays I don't think people use it that much. And the new kid on the block is Dagger. We're going to share the link to Dagger. Yeah. But in general, what it gives you is a way to not only run your workflows on a server or GitHub workflows inside GitHub workflows, but it allows your developers locally to run the same setup with the same checks, with everything the same, because you have containers.
Yeah. And the tagline of Dagger.io is CI/CD as code that runs anywhere. And that's like, that's a statement. It's not a tagline. I used it. It's amazing. Dagger, of course, is not sponsoring this episode, but it's just amazing.
Yeah, when we take containers and put them into anything, it becomes amazing, because you can do so much stuff in a very containerized way.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess it's time to switch gear and kind of, because we are still speaking about tooling, but our old good friend Rust, what does he have to offer in this space? For the very first time, Arctic Wolf, the industry leader in managed security operations, is offering you access to the most forward-thinking ideas from their most knowledgeable experts. Discover the top 2024 predictions developed by Arctic Wolf Labs, their team of elite security researchers, data scientists, and security engineers. Derived from the intelligence and insights gained from trillions of weekly observations within thousands of unique environments, these predictions trace the development of several trends based on their earlier, simpler iterations and anticipate which ones are poised to take significant steps forward in the coming months. Learn what the new year holds for ransomware as a service, Active Directory, artificial intelligence, and more when you download the 2024 Arctic Wolf Labs Predictions Report today at arcticwolf.com/data science. That's arcticwolf.com/data science. But you will also find the link in the show notes of this episode at datascienceathome.com.
Oh, there are so many tools in Rust nowadays. Probably for aerospace, not that much that are going to be beneficial, let's say. But you have a lot of open source actions that you can use, for example, with GitHub workflows, where you can install very easily binaries for matters of seconds that are Rust specific. Or install a specific toolchain, Rust toolchain, specific version with specific like components like the tools for formatting and linting, which are Rust format and Clippy, which also come out of the box with the Rust compiler. Another cool feature of Rust in general is this: the whole compiler comes with its own tools. So out of the box, you get documentation, you get formatting, you get linting, you get tests, like testing framework that you can use. And this is very powerful because the only thing that you need to do is just install Rust on a virtual machine and you have a continuous integration.
And of course, for the listeners, you cannot see the smiles in this chat that we have, that we are experiencing whenever we talk about Rust. And the one in one tool way of grouping this, indeed, as Acho said, all these tools are off the shelf, like they are for free, but not just for free. It's like how do they say, batteries included tool chain. So it's really like that. Lacho, however, we have to be fair and honest. There are some drawbacks about this, especially with Rust.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. One of the drawbacks is the slow compile time. So if you're running in a paid environment and you're compiling a big project, it usually takes long time to do so. And of course, even if you're running locally, I have these projects which are gigabytes.
Oh my
gigabytes
God,
of built artifacts. Especially, for example, with Bevy, just a simple project is like 5 gigabytes out of the box.
Five, lucky you. I've reached even 30 sometimes, 30.
I said out of the box. I'm not saying like the full-fledged application. I'm saying out of the box, right? Yeah. And these are things that you have to handle such in some way. And some of the tools that we're going to share as links below can give you, like, for example, installing a binary instead of directly installing it and compiling it on the server. You can use a tool to get a pre-built binary and, do it in matters of seconds. Other things, of course, you have, for example, there's a new testing harness, which should be like 3 times faster accordingly to the documentation. You can also check that out. And regarding aerospace, what you really, really want to run in continuous integration is more and more static analyzing tools, because this is how most of the aerospace industry catches bugs, especially in C code. And even for C, they have this proprietary specification called Misra C, which somebody took, and they didn't review the specifications themselves. But a few years ago, they wrote a small bunch of tests to see how Rust out of the box with the compiler and borrow checker aligns to these proprietary specification, which is meant to make you write less buggy code in C, and something to avoid when you're dealing with the aerospace industry.
And of course, indeed, static analysis tools are, the rule when it comes to unsafe languages, C, C++, because of course, spotting bugs at compile time, it's always better than runtime when it might be too late. Rust can help, definitely helps for these type of bugs, the ones at the compile time, of course, due to the properties of the language and the safety measures of Rust by design, which is one of the main reasons why we love Rust. And I guess we are pretty much at the end of this episode. Lacha, what do you think? Anything else to add?
Not for the episode itself. I think we covered pretty much the whole aspect of topics. I hope that was enough for the readers or listeners, and also they can read all the documentation, but also links that we have provided for all the tools. In general, I'm representing the Arrow Rust community, and we're in the open source community for Rust and aerospace. So we're trying to build the ecosystem of Rust. So tools, knowledge bases, tutorials, examples, whatever you think about, and provide a safe space for people to just learn. And I think that's the main point of the community. And that's how it has been since the beginning, which is like 4 years now. So anybody is welcome to join in and say hi in the Discord server or contribute to one of our projects, of course.
That is great. And of course, we will provide the links in the show notes of this episode at the official website, datascienceathome.com. As always, we also invite you to join our Discord channel together with one of Lacho, the link of which, as in the usual website, datascienceathome.com. We also have a Discord server where you can meet the community and discuss episodes, give your opinion about them, and maybe ask questions to the experts who are on the channel almost on a daily basis. That's it for today. Of course, stay with us because this is a series that we are going to complete. We're going to discuss about many other things when it comes to aerospace applications. We're going to discuss about hardware in space, about embedded programming, and about, the kind of the cutting edge technologies and latest news of what is happening in space when it comes to deep technologies. And of course, how does Rust play the magnificent role of the language of the future? Thank you so much for listening. Speak with you next time.